Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome into another edition of Infection Podcast. My name is Nick Craig. You can follow me on X at Nicholas M. Craig or check out our website, infectionpodcast.com. Joining me, as always, Brian with an I, Aldridge. Brian, what's going on?
Not too much. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Likewise, happy Valentine's Day to you as well.
Thank you. If you want to find me, of course, you can find me at Boise Computer on X or at Brian Aldridge on Gab, Getter, Truth Social, or wherever else
still exists. Okay. I specifically have not talked with you this week because I saw right after the show last week you were playing a game on Discord. Mm-hmm. Or Discord showed you were playing a game, and that game was the infamous Pow World. So,
yes,
Brian, have the floor is yours.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's break this down. My wife and I have been playing co-op, right? Okay. So, and I was trying to figure out how that works. First of all, I figured out they don't have local co-op in this game. They don't have split screen or anything like that. So we couldn't do, you know, we have one game pass, so we had to sign her up for like the core game pass or whatever. But what I've been doing is we like to play, you know, sitting next to each other. So I've been playing on a laptop with the remote stream from our Xbox upstairs, and then she plays on the local Xbox. So I used to play with a controller right next to her on the couch with a laptop, and then she plays on the TV. We've been having fun with it. We've been playing, you know, whenever we can here and there. But my wife's been really enjoying I don't think she's played a game like this.
It's funny you say that because your wife is texting me right now and she goes, Brian won't tell you. You have a black spot on your forehead. Yes, it is an ash on my forehead. And I guess you're not considerate enough to warn your illustrious co-host of that. Okay, so Brian, you played a lot of Ark. We played a lot of Ark together. You get the Ark vibes, but it's not Ark. It's got like early game Ark vibes where you're just like punching trees and hitting rocks. And
running around, finding creatures you've never seen before, things like that.
But then very quickly it transitions and does not become Ark. Because Ark, yes, you tame dinos, but you don't tame a gazillion dinos. Now, when you get super high level and you can just fight and battle and
Might be farming them for whatever reason.
Yeah. Sure. There's less of that mechanic in this game. What are your thoughts on the interaction with the base stuff? Because I think that's the cool thing, is that you put the pals in your base and they do tasks for you, like mine or move things around or generate rocks or wood. That mechanic is really, really cool.
Yeah, and that's something we've been trying to figure out, because it does seem either it's a little buggy or there's details that we don't quite understand yet. Because you'll say, I want to throw this creature that supposedly will harvest wood. I want to throw it at the lumber yard or whatever it is.
Yes.
And it'll say, you can't do it. But then later, for some reason, you can go and aim the same creature at the same lumber yard, and it'll say, all right, yeah, this will harvest this.
Are your pals upset?
That's a possibility. That's what I'm saying. There may be a detail that I'm not paying attention.
In the upper right-hand corner, it tells you the status of your pals.
Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye out for that, because that's one thing we've been trying to figure out, is we have all these different pals, ones that have certain abilities they can do, and we're trying to figure out, like, which ones do we put in the base to cover all those details.
Well, here's a simple question. Do you have a hot spring yet?
Yes. Yeah, we put in a hot spring.
All right. Well, then
it seems like creatures just walk over and sit in it.
Well, that's what relaxes them, correct.
So that makes them happier.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that make you happy, sitting in a hot tub? I mean, that's a relatively enjoyable experience.
Yeah, so, and then...
You're just sitting there, Brian, all day, you're just churning away at a tree, and you're telling me that sitting in a little hot tub, I mean, I think that's a realistic thing to expect.
And we've been running around the map, trying to figure out, you know, going to some areas. There's definitely a level gate, I guess you could call it, between different sections, to where when you go to one area, there's creatures that are in their 20s, 30s, things like that, and they'll just slaughter you, which I appreciate that, because I like the fact that you can't just run around the whole map and explore. You can kind of do that in Ark and get away with it to a point.
Yeah, you just run everything,
This one is... It can be pretty difficult, because it seems like at low levels, certain things chase you and just won't relent. But we've been having a lot of fun with it. Been playing it every day or two. I'm trying to think of anything that was the. So with the creatures, one thing that we haven't really done is try to gather a bunch of them, because supposedly there's a perk if you buy, if you get 10 creatures of the same creature. Yes. Does it just give you like an XP bonus, or does it?
Yeah, it's just a one-time XP boost.
Okay. So I wasn't sure if like we were supposed to aim for that and maybe it'd give you a better version of them.
Nope. It's just a simple one-time, essentially think of it like an achievement. It's an experience boost for doing that, essentially.
Okay. Yeah. So that, I mean, we have an okay base. One thing we'd made a mistake of is I tried an old arc trick of there's that giant mammoth that wanders around the map.
Yes.
And it came into our base. I said, well, hey, we've got all our creatures. Let's see if we can, if everybody just starts attacking him at the base, if we can take him down. That did not work.
No.
it ended up inside of our base, like the building that we had made. It somehow had gotten itself inside of that. And then just started stomping and destroying and killed every single creature we have, which luckily, you know, you can revive those. You don't actually lose them like you do in ARK.
Yeah, that's interesting. I forgot about that mechanic. Yeah, your things don't actually die. They just... They are for a period of time incapacitated. I never really thought about that.
I've never really played Pokemon or anything like that. So
it's nothing like Pokemon.
Okay, is it nothing like it? Because it's just I don't know how to compare it to
The only real Pokemon element is the battles that you do. Like when you go to that first tower, have you already done this?
We haven't been able to beat that yet. So I'm
okay.
I haven't really looked up but we're right at about that level to where we're getting close to beating
that. So that is the Pokemon element that they're in throughout that game. You go to gyms and you go through you battle all the trainers in the gym and then you get to the main trainer. I don't remember what they were called. And that's the toughest battle. And that's essentially the progression through Pokemon. You wander through all the things, you get to new towns, you battle, you find the gym, you beat the gym boss, you get an emblem or something like that, and then you move on to the next. That's kind of that's the mechanic of Pokemon that is in this game. Yeah. And I guess generally the kind of wandering around and catching things is also an element, but there's a lot more with the catching 10 to get the experience. I don't know if that, to me, that's more of a time sink than anything else, which is good. A game like this needs
keeping
time
people
sinks.
Busy, yeah.
Yeah, of course. You have to have something. If it was just catch one thing and then you're done, you'd very quickly run out of content.
I like that you can capture tons of things. Like I've done in my storage, I have like one full page of extra creatures so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been kind of just gathering things here and there. I haven't gone crazy with it, but. Trying to get if I see something new, I try to tame one.
That's a similar element to Pokemon as well. Is you're constantly, you see something new in the wild, you try and, you get its health down and then you try and catch it. Very similar mechanic to that.
So what would be, if you had a piece of advice for my wife and I, as far as for what you've experienced so far, what would it be?
Do the 10 of everything.
Okay, to get that XP.
Yeah, because I mean it's a significant XP bonus. It's like hundreds of XP points. To do that, I was told to do that early on, and I very much appreciate that advice.
All right, so I'll gather like the lambles.
Yeah, the chickens, the cats, everything that all those easy those are easy to catch 10 of the foxes. I haven't had a whole lot of time to play this week. I was traveling the latter half of last week and the early part of this week, so haven't had a whole lot of time to play. I was going to try and do the Steam remote play while I was out of town. My schedule was so tight I didn't have a chance to try that. So I haven't played in a couple of days, but that would be my early game advice. Outside of that, I don't know. I'm not there.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like, what is the next? Because I'm assuming it kind of unfolds. You can see from the little image up here.
It's a huge map.
You can fly. Yeah, you can fly. We've got creatures that you can ride. I have one that is like a water creature. I just don't have a saddle for it. Pretty much, it's level gated. You know, it's very much the one thing that's very much like ARK is your technologies and your abilities, the things you can craft, are unlocked by levels.
Which
just like ARK.
Which is good. I mean, you need that level gating mechanic. Again, if not, then you turn, then the game is just turns into a free for all.
Yeah. We have noticed that it, for some reason on hers, she hosts the game. It's been crashing out ever just randomly.
And what is she playing on?
She's playing on an Xbox.
Interesting.
Series S.
Oh, so that's what, so I wanted to ask you about that. So I have a couple of questions for you. What is the experience like with a, I know you're not directly playing with a controller. Maybe you are.
I'm playing with a controller as well.
Okay, so what is, how is that experience?
I mean, it's pretty good. I haven't tried anything with a keyboard to see how it might feel more comfortable or even with a mouse. Okay. But, you know, we pretty much can do everything. I think there's some things that would be a little bit easier to navigate some menus.
Sure. That's always the issue.
With a keyboard and mouse, they have you clicking whatever things, right bumper, left bumper to jump around.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once you get kind of used to that, it's not too bad. I don't think it's holding us back too much. I think that if we were playing on a computer, it'd probably be a little bit easier to play.
Yeah. I mean, any of these kind of games, and you know, I remember back in the day, Brian, when Minecraft first came to Xbox, the Xbox 360, and that was a big, at the time, it was a really big question of, can you take a game, you look back at it now, you think that game's not advanced at all in terms of its menu system. It's relatively mundane, but at the time it was like, wow, this is a relatively complex game that is only played with keyboard and mouse, and you're now transitioning it over to a controller. And that was kind of, that was one of the first times. I don't prefer to play games with controllers. Certain games, of course, Grand Theft Auto is one of them. Overcooked, things like that are more, different kinds of games. But that was the first time I ever saw that kind of transition. I never played Ark with a controller. I know it's available.
Yeah.
That's encouraging to hear from you.
Yeah, and I think that if I had started out on a keyboard, maybe I'd be a little bit frustrated transferring over, because then I'd be like, oh, it'd be a little bit easier to do this. It'd be a little bit easier to do that. But being that I've never played this on that, I'm not finding that it's too hard to play on a controller. So
that's a huge hurdle, though. And now this is obviously in Unreal. And I assume that transition from the back end is relatively easy. Right, that is a big feature of Unreal, is you just essentially make the game and then dump it out on whatever platforms you want.
Well, and they've redone in Unreal Engine 5 their whole input system to kind of accommodate this. So Unreal Engine 5 redoes. So let's say you made a game on an old version of Unreal. When you upgrade to Unreal Engine 5 on that project, it will remap. It integrates their new plugin, because now they're really going on these plugins with Unreal as far as different features you can enable and disable things to make it lighter weight. And one thing it does is the input mapping, like the whole input system changes to this new thing they've put in, which is a lot to accommodate controllers and to simplify that whole process and make it easy to go to set a game up where you can easily interchange between a keyboard, a mouse, and a controller.
Well, and I assume it supports cross-platform play. I don't know that to be the case.
You can't yet. So
I can't.
I can't join, from what I read, and whether they've changed this, I haven't read all the patch notes recently to see.
Sure.
But supposedly I can't connect from, let's say I was on PC and she gave me her invite code, I wouldn't be able to connect to her Xbox game, supposedly.
Well,
someone could fact check me on that, but that's what I read, was I needed to play on Xbox.
I'm not gonna fact check you on that. That sounds right for an early game, but presumably that will be a soon to come feature.
Could change, yeah.
And that is it is important that you have a similar experience on those platforms when you're doing that. I mean, that is, you don't want to have advantages or disadvantages for different players based on now you can do that, but then you have to kind of segment the platforms, right? You can't have PC players and console players on the same server.
That's one thing.
If the experience is vastly different based on your input method. I know it's the same game, but the input method.
Well, I know it frustrates players when one console has a feature that the other doesn't. For instance, with that Hogwarts Legacy game, PlayStation users got a whole special quest, and they have for a whole year that hasn't been unlocked to Xbox, which gives you, allows you to buy a store in the little, you know, town area of where the stores are, and you can sell your things at a higher rate. And that is exclusive to PlayStation. And people have been pissed off about that because it's been a year since the game has been released, you know, and they've added this feature that's only available on one platform, and people are complaining about it. It's like, it's almost better, you know, I don't know what they got paid to do that, but people want to have it nowadays, want to have the exact same experience between everything, you know, because that whole wall that's dividing all these things has gone away.
Well, and you know, that is a very, that's kind of the dirty backroom side of kind of game development. I mean, for the longest time, it was DLC packs on Xbox for Call of Duty. I mean, you get the DLC pack a month, if not more, before players on PlayStation would get it. And those people were pissed. However, for Microsoft, it was absolutely worth shelling out a whole bunch of cash to Activision. Full circle, they own it now, but shelling out a whole bunch of money to Activision, Treyarch, whoever the hell was behind that specific COD, to make sure that those packs were available exclusively on Xbox. Because why? Well, that made Xbox the go-to console for Call of Duty, not only with regular players, but you look at the popularity of MLG at the time, Major League Gaming, and these massive tournaments that they would run all over the world. Brian, every single one of those tournaments was run on an Xbox. And it was, and Microsoft absolutely owned that market through the Xbox 360. Then the Xbox One was a freaking train wreck, but they owned that through the Xbox 360, and it's because they paid for it. Well, I mean, let's be it's because they paid for it.
And
they were willing
to
show
Sony
the money
seems
for it.
To still be doing a lot of that because
they have no choice.
My son is interested in that new Spider-Man game that came out.
Okay,
and I said, well, it's a PlayStation 5 exclusive. Unless you have a PlayStation 5, you're not going to be playing that because they don't release it on PC, and they haven't released it even on a PlayStation 4, which is, you know, we have sitting in a closet here somewhere, a couple PlayStation 4s. So there you go. They don't let you.
Let's look at the player count real quick. Yeah. So we got 224,000 people playing right now. 24-hour peak, just shy of 500,000. Obviously it's seen a big drop off from 2 million players back, about 3 weeks ago, but I mean, this is still a pretty respectable number, Brian, when you're peaking
half a million
a day. And again, this is just Steam. This does not include what's going on over at
Xbox, it's on the Game Pass. So there, I bet you there's a lot of people playing on Xbox.
I'm sure it's free.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
They've been really big on getting Game Pass and being part of Game Pass. So it's, you know, it, to me, kind of makes sense that they would assume a lot of people would have it. And the numbers indicate that's absolutely
well. And here we purchased a copy for my wife. We got her the Game Pass Core, which doesn't come with the games, but it allows you to do multiplayer online and all
that. So that's the old Xbox Live Gold.
Yes, and so we did that and then bought this game so that we could play together. Because you, normally with a co-op game, she can play off of my purchase of the game or my Game Pass, you know, licensed version of the game. We couldn't do that with this because she has to play on a different Xbox, and I can't be logged into two Xboxes at the same time.
Well, you've been complaining about it for months, or years at this point. When is the family plan coming out? I know they demoed it in a couple markets, but they haven't really.
They've reversed it all. Yeah, they took away that whole plan and haven't talked about it since. And that's really frustrating because I want my kids to be able to play some of the Game Pass games, and I don't want to buy four Game Passes. I mean, just doesn't make sense to buy $100-something.
That's what I was going to ask. What's a Game Pass? Isn't it $19 a month?
I pay for the year. Let's see. Game Pass.
Well, I think, are they not getting rid of the year payment? Because I feel like we read that they were racking up the price.
I think they raised the rate payment. And because I renewed.
You got it for one more year at that cost, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking for the actual, I've got it pulled up here. Let's see if they have. Okay, so Ultimate comes down to $16.99 a month.
Well, that's not, I mean, that's still a lot of money.
So $16.99 a month. But that would be, you know, imagine that times four.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not an insignificant amount of money split amongst a group of people.
And, you know, the core, which comes with, okay, so the core has 25 high quality games. I didn't look to see what those were. But that one is for $9.99. So for $7 more, was that $8 more? You get all the games plus everything else, hundreds of games. But, you know, if she's not going to be playing it all the time, those games, then it didn't really make sense. So, yeah, we went to the $9.99 per month
which
version
is the
just,
same
just for her.
Which is the same price as the old Xbox Gold. It used to be $9, $10 a month, or maybe it was $100 a year if you prepaid it. There was some discount with it. Maybe it was $110, something like that. I used to pay it yearly. And you do get some of those 25 high quality games. I don't know exactly what those are. But you're getting more than you used to get when you just had regular Xbox Live, gold. 'Cause you got nothing for that except the pleasure and the opportunity, Brian, to play a game online and watch Netflix and stuff like that.
Well, and I would hope that, you know, if I'm paying a price for these online services for PAL World, you know, they have all these server costs that they were talking about. We talked about them last week. Does any of that go towards those? Like, you know, I understand that, you know, it's on the Game Pass. They're going to get money for that. But if I'm paying Xbox for ability to play an online game that they're having minimal to do with, they're not hosting the server, they're not doing any of that. Like, where's that money go? Because we're hosting an internal local game that then is connecting to PAL World. We're using minimal Xbox services to do that. They're not hosting the online. They're not doing anything. So what's the point of the core?
What's the point of the core? Well, the core would be...
Of the core Game Pass at that point. Like, we're connecting to PAL World servers to do online multiplayer. We're not connecting to Xbox to do that.
Correct.
It's kind of odd that they require core for a game that's not even connecting to their servers.
Well, this has always been the case on console. And this is one of the reasons that PlayStation there was some advantages of having a PlayStation versus an Xbox 360. There was no fee to play PlayStation games online. And on Xbox, you had to pay for Xbox Live Gold. This has always been something that console has done. And I think, Brian, if we're being honest about it, the cost comes down to the fact that they subsidize the cost of the consoles so much to get them out the door that, and it's pretty much, if you're buying an Xbox, you have to have one of those plans. If not, it's unless you're literally using it as a DVD player, it's completely useless. So they give you the device it's still expensive, but it's a discount to them. They're not making a lot of money on the physical hardware sales. So they essentially get it on the back end with Xbox Live Gold. And that's always been a big thing on Steam. Steam is a completely free service. You as the end user don't pay anything except for, you don't pay anything. There's not even a service fee. They pay everything to Steam and then they divvy it up to the developers. There's no cost associated with using Steam. But at the same time, prior to them making the Steam Deck, there was no hardware associated with it. So it would have been hard for them to say, hey, give us $5 a month. And it's like, well, for what? Like, I literally am just downloading software on my $1,000 computer. Why the hell am I paying you? Now, they could do that and they get away with it. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Go to Epic? I mean, let's be perfectly honest. You're going to run over to Epic with your tail between your legs? I mean, that's not going to work. But that's always been and then later on in the PlayStation realm, they also started that with PlayStation Plus and that whole debacle that they had with that. But that's huge for these companies to subsidize their development and their costs associated with the consoles. Now, in terms of what are the because we've been talking about this, what do the developers get out of putting their game in Game Pass? And the answer is it's not one size fits all. This is an article from 2020, so things could have changed. But Phil Spencer was asked about this, and he said, quote, "Our deals are, I'll say, all over the place. That sounds unmanaged, but it's really based on the developer's needs. One of the things that's been cool to see as a developer, usually a smaller or mid-sized developer, might be starting a game saying, hey, we're willing to put this on Game Pass on our launch day if you guys give us X dollars now. So that's, I assume that's still the platform for this. So there is some monetary thing. I don't know if it's one time or if it's recurring or if it's in payments or, you know, something like there's metrics associated with it. There's probably some metrics, I would guess.
So here's one thing I'm seeing.
Yeah.
It says developers who put their games on Xbox Game Pass receive royalties for each subscriber and are paid every time someone plays their game.
So it's like YouTube Premium.
Yeah. I'm assuming the numbers are really small, but with possible million people playing, the numbers grow.
Well, and I think there is also still some one-time money up front, too. That would seem realistic, you know, to help some of those development costs to get
out
of
Game Pass
day one.
So, according to leaked internal estimates by Microsoft, major video game publishers may need $100 million to $300 million to put their games on Game Pass on the day they also go on sale.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, it's really no different than what has happened in the past, except it's just different now. Instead of getting DLC early, the game is available on day one on Game Pass. And then I'm sure based on how much money they give you up front, the royalty structure is tiered in that way. I assume the smaller studios that don't get
aren't going to get $100 million for putting it on there.
Oh, I was going to say, not only are they not getting $100 million, they're probably getting a much smaller upfront. I would bet that maybe some of their royalties are higher, because it's going to, of course, be less users. I mean, less people playing some of these games. So that's very similar to the YouTube. It used to be called YouTube Red. I think it's just called YouTube Premium model, where you pay YouTube $10 a month. You watch
or
videos.
YouTube TV or what?
Well, no, like not YouTube TV, but YouTube ones. Premium, because you pay for that. You're ad free on the platform, but the content creators still get compensated based on you watching their videos ad-free. So there is that split there. So, boy, that's got to be a royal pain in the ass to deal with behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like you're taking $9 and taking the thinnest razor you can to it and carving it off piece by piece. That has got to be quite the thing to obviously, they have computer algorithms and programs that deal with it, but talking about a relatively small sum of money, $9 a month, $10 a month, potentially split amongst dozens of potential entities if you're playing these different games.
I've got some numbers here of different games and what they receive to put their game on Game Pass.
Can you put that link in the show notes?
Yeah.
That would be great.
I'll put it at the top and
right
there.
Great. Let's see what we got here.
So if you look here, so the one that's the highest as far as the one-time payment is Star Wars Jedi Survivor, $300 million. So they got $300 million to put that on there. Mortal Kombat 1, $250 million. Suicide Squad, $250 million. Assassin's Creed Mirage, $100 million. Gotham Knights, $50 million. Dying Light 2, $50 million. Lego Star Wars, $35 million. Grand Theft Auto 5. Makes 12 to 15 million per month. Keep it on the Game Pass. Yeah. So that in the end will be a much higher number. And that's a 12-year-old game, right?
No, it's more than 12. It came out 2011. It's 13. It'll be 14 years old.
13, 14-year-old game is still making 12 to 15 million per month just to exist. Red Dead Redemption 2, 5 million per month. Dragon Ball, 20 million. Wreckfest 2, 10 to 14 million. Return to Monkey Island, $5 million. Just Dance, $5 million. Net Crisis Glitch Busters, $5 million. Blood Runner, $5 million. Here's what surprises me: Baldur's Gate 3, $5 million. One of the highest rated games, I think, on Steam for the number.
Yes.
I mean, it's just what a huge game for them. $5 million. One of the lowest numbers that you see on here. You know, it's
but
the bottom half.
But let's be clear: when Baldur's Gate came out, relatively mid-sized studio, nobody knew if it was going to be worth
sure,
it.
Yeah.
Well, of course, yeah.
They've renegotiated to keep it on there, I would hope, because it's one of the hottest games still. People love that game.
They do. But, you know, you might look at these numbers and go, oh, my God, $300 million. Well, when you think about what some of these games can generate from selling it for $70 a copy, yes,
yeah,
$300 million is a lot of money. I don't have $300 million. I wish Brian's got it, but I wish I had $300 million. But when you're looking at a Star Wars Jedi Survivor, that is an S-tier game in terms of fan bases and notoriety and things like that. It is almost as high as you can get. Games like Call of Duty and things like that. So they are missing out on hundreds of millions of dollars worth of potential $70 transactions with a game just going on Game Pass. And for Microsoft, they promote it. Yep. Game Pass day one. Yep. Why the hell would you go out and spend $70 on it then if it's available on Game Pass day one and you're already spending $16 a month?
Yep. Well, and so these numbers, I mean, this, now you have a better idea. There's a ton of small little games on there. They're definitely getting smaller, probably numbers than Baldur's Gate. You know, who knows? They don't have the lower numbers here. But I bet you, you know, a game may get $500,000 if it's a smaller indie studio.
Sure.
Might get $500,000 to put their game on, which for that small indie studio might pay for the project as far as make them break even at least to have the game released and then hope for sales after that, which may be the saving grace because it's so hard to be a studio that stands out and makes money on a game anymore. Because if it's not hot, it seems like people aren't, especially right now, people aren't buying.
Yeah, like, for example, I'm just looking at the Star Wars Jedi game. It generated $40 million in revenue the first week it was out. So, I mean, now, $300 million is obviously a lot of money compared to 40, but that just gives you the idea of when a game is released, how much money they can make in the first week or the first month or the first 6 or 8 weeks, depending on what their timetable is. So, it's probably rivaling those numbers. And on the other side, Microsoft wants to pay to keep people on their platform.
Yep.
I mean, that's also part of it. And when they were releasing the Call of Duty DLC on Xbox early, there was no direct financial benefit to them. I mean, they were literally paying for content that was already made to be locked to a platform for X number of days just because of cash. The benefit was, anybody that was playing Call, most people playing Call of Duty were playing it on Xbox because they wanted that advantage. So Microsoft's not, this is not a foreign thing to pay for having things first or available on your platform. That has been the console market for quite some time, as long as I've been playing console games.
But I also think that having these list of games that people are likely to purchase makes, in their minds, a person like me justify the Game Pass.
Sure.
Because I know that if I buy that game, I may or may not play it very much, but I may play it for a little while. I'll have pitched out $60 for it, played it for a month, and then moved on, versus I pay, $100 whatever dollars for the year, and I can play that game as much as I want and feel free to walk away from it and switch over to another game without feeling guilt. That's the thing for me, because if I buy two games, and I didn't really find interest in them and didn't stick to those games, I've already paid for my year Game Pass.
Sure. Well, and
now, at least with the Game Pass, I have the option to go do something else and try to find a game that does, itch that whatever it is I'm looking for.
And exactly what you're describing is Microsoft's model. Make the catalog so great that people will say, yeah, why would I not spend $17 a month on this game or for this service to get this game? And on the flip side, Microsoft, of course, does get a physical cut of console sales. And they, of course, take a percentage from their store. But that is we're looking at two different things. We're talking about one-time money for selling a physical game versus reoccurring payments. And a business, as we're all well aware, has reoccurring expenses, and largest, of course, being that of employees and real estate or capital. So for them to have tens of millions of people paying, hundreds of millions of people potentially paying $17 a month, That is a much better long-term, projectable, sustainable business model versus, well, Christ almighty, I hope a whole bunch of $70 games sell so we can take, you know, pennies off the dollar because it's got the Xbox yep. logo on it, which is what the model has been in the past, which is why services like services like Xbox Live existed, because it was a constant revenue stream for the service and for keeping the development yep. of the console up and operational.
And I think I don't get how Steam does it. I know
they charge a ridiculous fee.
Some studios.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think this is what's keeping some studios afloat right now is this whole game. I mean, we've looked at the number of studios laying off, closing studios, shutting down projects. Getting $100 million for a game is something that could make it to where you know for the next 6 months you're going to keep people employed. And I think this is the saving grace right now, this type of a system. Because when it comes down to games, if studios that are relying on a game saving them are the ones shutting down.
Yeah.
Like an individual service keeping up. And I think if it's on the Game Pass, you're almost guaranteed at least to keep payroll. I mean, that's the goal, right? Keep payroll until times get better so you can release a game that might hit big and you know, explode with users.
But let's also bring up the idea that vast majorities of these studios are not getting $100 million. I mean, you have to have, going back to your list here, I mean, the people
maybe a $50 million over a year.
The $100 million is going to, you know, Ubisoft and Assassin's Creed, which is one of the, which is a very, very popular, recognizable game franchise. But look at this though, Just Dance. Now, obviously that is a much smaller game. It's very well known, but it's a much smaller game. $5 million to put it on Game Pass. Yeah. That's not a lot for a game that is very well known and I assume relatively popular.
I think it has a lot of DLCs though, right? I think for some of these they're relying on, because I think that one you can get upgrade songs and things like that. For some of these, that base cost isn't really where they're expecting their money. I think a lot of them, they're expecting their money from the DLCs and the expansions and everything else that you might add on to the base version of the game.
Sure.
At least with Just Dance, I think that fits into their model. So maybe that would excuse them having a smaller, because it's not everything is included with the Game Pass.
But I think the point, and I now that I heard you speak again, I understand the point you're making. It's not even necessarily the one-time injection. It's the royalties over a period of time for these games
to
on
keep
Game
payroll
Pass.
Going.
Yeah. If it's popular,
because, you know, one thing, can you pull up, there's one where it's the impact of the 16,000 game industry layoffs here.
Sure.
There's a chart in here. I know you're a very visual chart guy.
I love charts.
There's a chart in here that visualizes the layoffs through the year. I just want you to see that. Look at, I'm assuming this is for tax reasons that so many people laid off after the year. I don't know. But look at January 1st of this year and the number of layoffs. You can see there were bursts of layoffs at certain times a month throughout the whole year. Look at the beginning of this year. It's insane the number of layoffs we had, way worse than any time last year. Any one time.
Well,
it's almost solid.
I mean, it is almost a solid black line. I mean, you look at January of 2023, and it's probably
there was
the
burst then.
Second darkest plot in November, December, pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty rough there too. January is stark difference.
Yeah, well, it is, but I think a lot of companies, I think as you noted, got through, and fiscal years are kind of weird. Companies
they don't line up.
Some companies do, like. Government does like October to October. Some businesses follow that. A lot of businesses are January through December, though. And I don't know if it's tax reasons as much as it is. All right, Brian, it's the first of the year. We've got X millions of dollars flowing out of the flowing out of the company every month for employees, and nothing is selling. Nobody is buying anything because nobody has any freaking money. Props to PC Gamer. This is a, I know we give them a lot of grief. This is a very interesting chart.
And it really puts into perspective just what has happened last month. I mean, I don't think most people realize when you hear these numbers.
Because we,
And it's amazing just what, even combining the end of November through January, I bet you those layoffs were close to at least or maybe even greater than what happened for the whole rest of that year.
It, undoubtedly, it's greater than the whole rest of the year. Yeah, undoubtedly. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are what the studios are facing right now. You know, we've the number of layoffs that I've been seeing, you know, that remember I said last week, that list has just grown, or it's 2 weeks ago. That our list of issues in the economy, that list is just constantly once we go through it on a show, like the next week, it's back. And that's why, you know, I felt like in December, we cleared it out in one of our shows. And like January, the whole thing went right back to the same length it was before. And that right there shows you.
Yeah,
shows you exactly why that happened. It's sad. But the Game Pass is something that will prevent that from happening. Because it will keep you fiscally afloat to be able to release another game in the future versus, you know, how many Threshold games and Blackbird Interactive, and, you know, all these, there's a huge list we have now of studios that are releasing people or shutting down. And I bet you those aren't Game Pass games.
Well,
or projects that aren't on Game Pass.
Yeah, I mean, I bet you there's some of it that's on Game Pass. Because, Brian, if it's anything like Spotify, and I'm not saying it exactly is, but you're talking about pennies per session, fractions of pennies per sessions played. So unless you've got a game that's really gangbusters, that's really flying off the shelves, or off the virtual shelves in this case of session starts, it's probably not that much money. Power World? Killing it on the royalties, I'm sure. Other games that are popular, killing it on the royalties. For others, it's like indie artists and Spotify, or small YouTubers and Google. You get a check for $18.40.
When we look at some player numbers, you have a game that is well known. Like a lot of people in our circles will be like, "Oh yeah, I know that game." And they've got 25 to 250 players.
Yeah.
That is just not going to do it. You know, even if it's on Game Pass, unless they're paying you a substantial amount per month, which if you only have 25 to 250 players in any one time, they're not paying you $1 million per month to host your game.
No. To kind of give some credence to that, going back to this chart, games as popular as GTA, even Red Dead Redemption 2, I would say is a very popular game. $5 million per month. I assume that's royalties. I don't know. Maybe that's a $5 million per month baseline.
Maybe they have a contract
or
they've calculated out what they actually get.
That would seem something like Rockstar would do, have a different deal than everybody else. But you're talking about a game that's that popular that's making $5 million a month. Imagine what a game with even 25,000 players is probably not that much.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, this is something Game Pass, I think, really is helping some of these indie studios, though.
Yeah.
Because we've seen so many indie studios that they release a game and it just doesn't take off. First of all, because usually they price it wrong.
Sure.
Or they do something stupid. And why are you going to pay $60 on an indie studio that doesn't have a track record, that you don't know if the game is going to be good? You turn around, you throw it on Game Pass. It's like you had said earlier, practically free, right? You know, as far as you've already paying the subscription, you're not paying extra to try that game out. That's how, if you do have a game that's fun, but people don't know your brand, that's how you get people to know your brand. They go on Game Pass, like, "Oh, that was a lot of fun." And you'll start building up people that then will recognize your products going forward, where then you'll maybe be able to get people to purchase it when it comes out. But most studios, that's not what's happening. You'll get a niche of people maybe that'll purchase it day one from an unknown studio. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't want to take the risk anymore. And Power World, I think, was one that really came out of nowhere, and kind of went opposite of that track record.
Well, that's exactly the case. The risk. I mean, there is no risk to playing a game on Game Pass except for the bandwidth that it costs to download it or streaming it if that's an option for you. Buying a game for even $25 or $30 on Steam, which is typically the price for those indie games, I think Powell was 30 bucks, which I would say was a great deal. But there's a lot of $30 games that are absolutely not worth the price tag. So you're right. It is a risk. I mean, you know, especially in this economy, when extra cash for these kinds of leisure activities are harder and harder to come by. So that makes perfect sense to me. In terms of indie studios, or maybe not super well-known studios, getting your game on Game Pass, hope to God that it's fun and people enjoy it.
And then
after that, not only are you making money on the Game Pass royalties, but people might go, oh, yeah, because you know, PC doesn't really have that. Yes, there is the ultimate thing where you can stream some games, but people go, oh, yeah, my friends on consoles are playing this. I'm going to buy it on Steam. 30 bucks, whatever. And drop, you know, I can do that. It's not out of the blue.
And I think that even, if you can compare it to Netflix even, I think there's a lot of shows or even movies that have made a profit that would not have made a profit if they weren't on Netflix.
Absolutely.
That type of a system, because when you're going through and looking at a list of, let's say, on Amazon, you know, you're looking at something to rent. Now Plex even, you know, offers rentals. When you're going and looking at a rental and saying, oh, do I want to pay $3, you know, as little as even $3 to rent this game or this show or let's say a movie. If it's a movie that you've never, you don't know anybody in it, you're very less likely to pitch out a little bit of money. But when you're browsing around on Netflix or whatever service you view, you come across a show that's like, oh, that might be all right. It looks a little bit low budget. You go watch it. For instance, like I think it's 28 days later, 28 hours, whatever, the original one. That was a very no-name studio that released that horror film. And it took off huge. Well, going into it, people would have looked at it and it looks kind of low budget, you know, even though it was acted very well and they did a good job with it.
Sure.
People wouldn't give it the chance. But you put something like that on Netflix nowadays, and people will check it out, and you'll build that huge audience to where then you have the chance to release another one, and then release another one. I think that helped a lot of studios in the film industry to grow. The Game Pass systems like this help people in the video game industry to grow and get past small studio status.
We have talked a lot about the disadvantages of subscription services and season passes and this kind of subscription model that the economy has gone to. We've documented all of that very well. This is the positive side of it, some for the consumer, but I think a lot for the consumer, but also very heavily benefits the studios, whether it be film, TV, or video game, as long as you're making a good product. I mean, if you're just dumping out hot trash, then
kind of filters those out too.
Sure.
Right. It's, because they're going to, if something's not performing on Game Pass, they're not going to keep it on there. If it's not making anything, you know, they're not showing numbers, it's going to curate itself, because either the studio's not making enough to justify, you know, they'll probably keep it on there as long as they can, because, you know, what's the loss? But Microsoft's not going to want to keep a game that's got 25 active players. I mean, it's just not worth the keeping it in their system.
Correct. Yeah, the bandwidth.
The bookkeeping of it.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, Brian, good recap. I'm glad you're enjoying Power World. I guess we'll have to wait for some of the cross-platform stuff to get kicked online, and then we will have to jump in there together. Where can folks find you on the old interwebs?
All right. Well, if you want to find me on X, you can find me at Boise Computer. Of course, at Brian Aldridge on Gab, Getter Truth Social. If you want to go check out my blog, biteoftech.com, that's BITE. And of course, if you go to our website, infectionpodcast.com, just go to the upper right-hand side where it says join us on Discord. If you do that, you can go, first of all, contact Nick or I directly. It's a great way if you need to get a message to us, do that on Discord. Or if you want to maybe submit a link to our show news channel. We review that before the live show, and it's a good way to get topics or maybe a game that you're playing into the show, and we review that. If you want to talk politics or maybe you want to play some ARK, we've got all those there, 11 ARK servers running. If you want to watch the live show, you can do that through Twitch or YouTube, or we upload the show after the fact on Rumble. We also upload all the podcast forms at the lower right-hand side after the show is complete. So whatever device platform you want to listen on, it's right there. If you go to the particular show notes, episode show notes, you can do that and play a video and audio right there. And then maybe there's a video we played or something that you're listening and you couldn't see. Just click on the link for that episode or that topic, and you can play whatever it is right there. It makes it really easy to follow along if you're a listener. If you want to support us, there is a support menu option up top, or you can go to infectionpodcast.com/support.
I fixed it.
Nice. That was good. I was wondering if that was going to
come. I fixed it by simply just closing the software last week and reopening it today. So,
perfect.
I'm Brian. I'm putting in the effort. All right. Thank you very much, Brian. Happy Valentine's Day again to you. We will chat with you next week.
See you later.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to check out my daily antics, you can do so by visiting my website. It's Nick Craig. NickCraig.com, or you can follow me on X at Nicholas M. Craig. As Brian noted, if you missed any portion of the program, especially if you want to check out that PC Gamer layoff chart, you can find all of that by visiting our website. It's infectionpodcast.com. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.